Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is the Best Ever You Show, and I'm your host, Elizabeth Hamilton Garino. And we've got our guest, Angelina Music. She's the CEO and founder of Momtrepreneurs. I can say it this week.
Yay!
Yay, and you're feeling better.
Well, thank you for having me today. How has your week been?
Well, you know, I guess the better question is, how has your week been? You're the one who has not been feeling very well. I've got, all three of the four of our kids sick home yesterday, probably with the same bug you've got or had.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And how do you keep them entertained during this interesting wellness?
Isn't that fun? Oh, yeah. hang on. I'm going to cough next, too. Probably like, TV or books, homework, you know, that kind of thing. It's pretty low-key around here. So, anyway, but enough about us. You know, this is about you. I was hoping, you know, you're part of our CEO week. You're the second person on from our CEO week. And we had Kathy Papera, the founder and CEO of Lilypad Baby, on yesterday. And, so I kind of wanted to see if we could talk to you today about being a CEO. And if anybody is thinking about being a CEO and doing an at-home CEO type of gig, you know, I thought we could maybe go from there. What do you think about that?
Oh, yeah, I think that's great because it does touch on commitment and responsibility.
Doesn't it? Yeah, I thought we could, since it's just you and me today, Katie has a family matter that she has to tend to. I thought maybe we could almost just like have a conversation back and forth about what it's like to run our two companies even.
I believe that's a good idea.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, we'll go with that then. And then I think also in there we could talk a little bit about the second point of your Believe and Achieve series. There were 7 points you made last week, and I almost kind of want to start with that because a lot of the times people dream of doing something.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say I dream of running Best Ever You, or you dreamed of running Momtrepreneurs. How do you take that initial idea and implement it?
Well, for me, I have a system now to help others with, but it's really coming from, which I wish we were taught this in school as kids.
Mm-hmm.
I really do, because the decisions that can turn into healthy habits, or the healthy habits that can turn into creating better decisions, would influence our better identifying, taking the time to identify what our, not just our passion is, but we're excited about, because as women, we're emotional.
Yeah.
And so we can cry over a commercial, and that could be your passion for the next 30 seconds. And so there are a number of things that I have found it's really important to be aware of, because when you decide on moving forward with a business, it's not just about you, if you have a family involved or a spouse involved. And it isn't even just about you if you're single either, because you do have a sphere of people around you, your friends and your family, and people that care about you, and surrounding yourself and filtering and removing and adding to that sphere is really, really vital to a healthier decision-making process when
you
decide.
Yeah. So, I mean, do you think that's the A number one thing would be the support network around you? Then?
I do.
Okay.
I really do, because when it comes to, I've decided what my passion is. I'm going to have my action plan, be A, B, C, whatever that is. Then what's valuable is to have input from others, because our perceptions and our awareness and lack of awareness, what we know and what we don't know that we don't know, it's like the kid that pedals up the hill, and then it goes over, and it's just sky, and you really don't know that when you get there. Does the hill then extend even higher, or are we now going way downhill fast? And if there was a little sign, you know, a street sign that said arrow, turn this way, or, you know, what the condition is from the point of reference further back, then better preparation would be put in place. And better decisions would be made for that.
To really get nuts and bolts of a company and owning a company, do you think a second step is, you know, and we may disagree on this one, do you think a second step is absolutely having a business plan?
I think business plans are helpful because they are a guide. I encourage that people create business plans in pencils. What I have been disturbed about.
Yeah.
What I've been disturbed about is how many times I've even been approached where someone wants to hire me to create a business plan. And after spending some time with them, we're not going to see eye to eye on this business plan because I'm looking at the success rate of what they're wanting to go into, they think. They're looking at, I just want to get that money to make it happen. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, unless we work together as a team, because, again, I bring some expertise to the table that they don't yet have, that they need to learn if they don't have those perceptions or skills yet. That's why they're even talking to me in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And if certain things are not going to be made in their best interest, then I'm not going to move forward with that business plan because they're not going to follow it. And when they don't follow it, then they end up not being able not just to pay the loan back, but the stress that they put themselves under, they choose to put themselves under, their family that they put under, their reputation, they end up hurting in the community. And when your business fails because of poor decisions, because stubbornness and ego gets in the way, that's a walking disaster. And so what I encourage is that we go back to, let me get some of your childhood information in my file. We're gonna walk through your childhood because I want to make sure, I mean, based on what they say, their growing up process, information that I get helps me ascertain, are they moving forward in an industry that is truly an extension of a strength?
Yeah, that's a good point right there. Because some people, I've noticed this too, some people really dream about doing something, but it doesn't match up with what they're good at doing. And it's fascinating to see somebody fumble through that, whereas if you take a giant step back and match up a strength to a concept or idea or something like that, it might just take off. Have you witnessed that before?
Oh, definitely. And right now I am going through this process with one of my youngest clients. Her name is Courtney. She's 24. And her dad has hired me to mentor her to success as an entrepreneur. And she is a hair colorist, a hair designer. Mm-hmm. And what was really funny is I was in Spokane last week, Spokane, Washington, and we were doing a second round of filming. And the first round, she converted my hair from the blonde into the brunette. And we've got about four different colors in there. And and then this last week, you know, we had to film the extension process, and I've got extensions. And I interviewed her during this process. So her father asks, how did you know in that first conversation with Courtney that this was going to work? And now I see the process play out, and I'm just in tears and amazed and beyond words about it. My response to him was that I just needed to give her the opportunity to talk about her childhood. How far back she remembers doing what? How much hang time did she have with mom? What was that like? With dad? What was that like? With brother? What was that like? When she wasn't around them, what was she doing? And create a lifeline of information. Through that, she shared the artistic interest that she had, which was an escape and coping mechanism from some of the hardships the family went through.
Right.
Mom was a nurse, busy working, not around as much. Dad works in the pharmaceutical. He's busy. He's with the brother a lot because he relates better to his son. He didn't know, how do I relate to a girl now that I have a daughter? So there are gaps in Courtney's life where she felt alone.
Mm-hmm.
And what she did is she funneled that alone time into a creative energy. What's really cool is that her parents did have the sense, and her grandparents, to pick up and observe how artistic she was, and they committed on what they could do by having her consistently over the years go to different art classes and teachers that were incredible mentors and coaches of their time when it comes to three-dimensional drawing, not just the color, but drawing.
Right.
And so as she shared her story, and last week I had her chronicle it on film. I said, you're telling a story, You're telling your story. The output is where she is right now at 24. Why is she so talented in what she does? And how does she want to use that talent? So with her, it was, let's look at your strengths. Let's look at some of the challenges you went through growing up. Let me understand how the two have woven themselves together. Let's look at the gaps, and let's start there.
Nice. Yeah, very nice. Yeah, I love stories like that when somebody matches their strengths up, you know, strength up with the job, if you will, or what they want to do in life. It makes it so much more pleasant, and it almost feels as though you're not working.
Right, and the thing is, though, most people, unless someone initiates that kind of conversation or process, they generally don't know. They may think, I mean, there are people who, okay, I'm talented in this, I love doing this, I'm going to do it, you know, and
yeah,
it's,
some people
it's
don't
natural.
Think that much about it, and it's just, it
right.
is what it is, yeah.
But right.
some people struggle and need the guidance for it.
Correct.
I have a question for you. What do you think separates out CEO material? What makes a CEO? What do you think some of the characteristics of a CEO are?
I believe that embracing lifelong learning and understanding the value of ongoing self-transformation is really important, especially as women, because we have different seasons in our lives. Therefore, we are often going to have many versions of our CEO-ness, not necessarily even in the same industry.
Yes.
So that I think that's really important. And being a successful CEO, if you have a team around you, it's not about you.
Right. Yeah, it is the one case where it definitely isn't about the CEO itself. I love to mentor other people and
mm-hmm.
give people things to do that I know they're capable of doing, but maybe they don't have the self-confidence to do or something
yeah,
like that. You can,
yeah.
I love challenges like that, and I love surrounding myself with people like that because it's fun to see people grow and so forth. But What are some other characteristics you think of CEOs? Do you think you have to be brilliant with money or have great management skills or anything along those lines?
Most successful CEOs, including, you know, your Bill Gates and your giants as such, even your Trump and Oprah and just all of those mega individuals, they have hired the right people to work in their strengths so they can work in theirs. So I'm strong in strategy. I'm strong in numbers. I'm strong in a number of areas, which again goes back. Your strengths were often your coping mechanisms growing up to excel in areas that have value to you or to survive around chaos. So your strengths are often your childhood coping mechanisms that you've become so great at doing, you can monetize that in the marketplace. However, if I take my strength as income diversification strategist and I fire hose a client with, here are 50 ways to make additional money, I've offended them in my strength. They can't handle that. So discernment on your strength and then surrounding people on your team that play the different roles that they're passionate about and they're strong in. One, you're not supposed to carry everything on your shoulder. You shouldn't, because then you're not as effective in the strongest area that God has designed you for and that you're wired for and that you're excited to be doing the majority of the time.
Yeah, we talked about this yesterday with Kathy also. You know, for example, if you're not a strong website person, it doesn't make sense for you as a CEO to sit there and do, you know, and create a website. Hire it out.
Exactly.
Or something like that.
Exactly.
It's as simple
yeah.
as that. Yeah. Where somebody's strength. But, you know, my biggest concern with that is we had this discussion yesterday too, and maybe you have a take on it. What's the difference between a hobby and a business? Because some of those website places, they'll charge you an arm and a leg, and it's not feasible for a person at home with, you know, like me with four kids to say, yeah, here's 35 grand. Do my website for me. You know, it can be ridiculous. Even $5,000 can be ridiculous or $2,500 can be ridiculous. Do you think at some point you shouldn't do what you're going to do because of money?
I think it comes back to, and you touch on a very good subject, since Daniel and I do own a technology company, and that is one of our strengths. When we interview a client, mainly I go through the process, it's important for me to understand not just their passion, commitment, and their level of responsibility in what they want to move forward with and how it affects their time around their family, their budget, all of that. We generally start with the least amount of investment that will start producing results in the shortest amount of time. And web companies, technology companies, they're not business consultants. It's like telling them to build a kitchen table and you pay them to build a kitchen table. It's about function. It's not necessarily how many ways can I transform this kitchen table. They may not have that strength. Most do not.
Right.
As a team, we do, and so we will lay out phases of a person's business. And a hobby versus a business comes back to what level of commitment in time, in becoming more educated on what is required for that passion to be monetized. I mean, there are things that I start doing, and I lay things out, and things in the market change. I pull back. We started with a community on Momtrepreneurs, And then I looked at what was going on in the marketplace, the trend of social communities, and I stopped it. It made no business sense to move forward with it. Now that we're doing the 5,000-mile bicycle ride and the Momtrepreneurs movie, as we film women along this route, it will make more sense then to turn that on. But I stopped because it didn't make sense at that point. So,
well, social communities are tricky, I think, anyway, because, you know, let's talk social community for a little bit because we're both pretty technical.
Mm-hmm.
And
I
can't tell you how many times I've hemmed and hawed over social community because it's like prying people away from Facebook. And somebody said to me, why bother doing that? You already have your community in Facebook. And the argument there is, you know, if you have an advertising-driven business and the Internet sets a standard that you need 1 million unique visitors per month to draw a big advertising dollar, then that's the cause for the community if you're advertising-driven. If it's just a community to have fun in and you don't care about ad revenue, then, you know, keep it on Facebook and save the hassle. But there's a couple neat, I think there's a couple neat software programs that do nice communities, like Best Ever Used Community.
It's
pretty good, you know. And it just opened a few months ago and has, I don't know, probably like 170 people in it. But what's really frustrating about, about the Internet is that you don't seem to be taken seriously on any national level until you really have traffic.
Uh-huh.
And the traffic, the traffic is on some of the bigger sites, you know, like Twitter or Facebook and so forth. So it's, you know, it's definitely interesting with
Well, what we have found, again, it goes back to you continue to stay educated on the trends in the marketplace, in the area that you are passionate about, in the area,
mm-hmm.
your business that you want to make money. And so for Momtrepreneurs, because we're both, you know, the traditional, we've gone through phases. I mean, when Momtrepreneurs started on the playground 20-some years ago, it was, you know, with my two kids, with my daycare kids, because that's what I had at that time, and then mentoring moms on the playground bench on how to start their business. So there are seasons, I believe, of companies depending what product that they offer. And then when Daniel and I launched Momtrepreneurs in 2003 online, it was not just online. It was, we're having the physical events. I want to incorporate personal development and filming the women at these physical events. And then I'm going to air that on TV, on radio, and I'm going to push it out in email. And so doing that consistently, is why in that first year we had almost 2 million women internationally, but it was massive pushing out. And so, you know, now we're in a different place. There are different trends. With Facebook, I have not pushed building a Momtrepreneurs following on Facebook, because actually right now is a season where people are pulling back. The people
out
that
of Facebook,
they're pulling back. If you notice, certain people who were traditionally regulars that you see posts and stuff, you're not seeing as many. And it's about this time of the year. Same thing happened last year. Same thing happened previous year.
Yeah.
And people are not, those type of what used to be regulars are not posting as much. You have your fun, silly friends posting, you know, silly stuff. But your more serious contacts, there's a trend with, you know, what's going on in the economy, what's going on in their business. And also Facebook does say, if you grow your community to a certain point, we can take it over.
Yeah, exactly. Anything, I saw that.
Yeah. And anything you post there that's video or photographs, we have right to use. At no compensation to you. So we've had people whose photographs have ended up in billboards in other countries, and they can't do a darn thing about it.
Yeah, no, I know. So, Yeah, I've been watching that trend a little bit and not doing as much on Facebook also.
Well, the best ever you community, what's great about having your own community, the benefits of having your own community is that it is a more protective environment.
Yeah.
There is an opportunity for more like-minded people to collaborate and to interact with each other. And there is more of an opportunity for deeper conversation that people can go, okay, it's safe here. I can open up a little bit more. It's just more, excuse me,
yeah,
edifying. It's not as, I hate to use the word cheap, but it's just deeper. And that is the benefit of having your own community. And when you just have to massage it, and it does take time.
Yeah, it definitely does. The one trend I'm noticing on the internet, I've noticed this for a long time, is that I've got a blog coming on. Everybody and their brother thinks that they are it. And everybody is starting the same company in hopes of blogging online with attracting a million people, and boom, you're famous. Everybody.
Yeah.
And it's a fascinating trend where I keep scratching my head, and I'm a Midwesterner, and I think, well, gosh, let's all get together. If we all get together, it'll be stronger instead of every single person doing their own thing. And what is that? Do you have any thoughts on that? Have you noticed it too?
Well, yeah, and there's a myth. You know, that's the thing, is that there are myths out there, and there are people being sold on these myths by people even getting paid to do seminars. And yeah, it's really frustrating, because often by the time someone gets to me and becomes my client, I rarely have a virgin become my client. I think I've had maybe 3 virgin clients that have started from zero. Nobody touched them. Nobody got to them. They didn't come to me with any of their sob stories about how many thousands of dollars that they lost.
And people would have burned them. And oh my gosh, yeah. I can't tell you. You would cringe at my stories over the past 3 years. Yeah.
I have a feeling I probably would.
Yeah.
A bottle of wine.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's quite simple that those people that are going to succeed understand, and if they don't yet understand, need to become better educated on, it takes multiple vehicles to succeed. There isn't just one vehicle. Blogs are more used for, SEO support nowadays than, people actually going there. People are busy in their own lives. The idea that people think of you more than maybe you think of yourself. No, you think of yourself more than people think of you.
That's what I always say too. I'm like, I can't figure it out. Who has time to read all of that information every day? I mean, you could literally sit for days on end and just read people's blogs because they're so self-important.
Well, and even if their blog content is good, it's the myth that when I put something out there that's even humble, incredible work, the world's going to come. And that's really grieving for people who really, really care and who really want to touch other people's lives when they're not getting that response. The authors that we have as clients, their initial perception was, oh, I'll have a book and it'll sell. I'm like,
yeah.
No.
No.
No, you still have to go hit the sidewalks. You still need to do speaking engagements. It has not changed. When you're on TV, your website book sales will go up a little, but you make the most amount of money in book sales when you do a speaking engagement. However big or little it is up to that person. And when you incorporate your book as a free item to the cost of a seminar, it just comes with it. It's an added value. That's how you make money with a book. Or if you are exceptional, like my client Ron White, who's the memory training guy, he has to continually perform and be in these championships to continue getting on TV to continue to promote his product. Now, if he just did his memory system once, which it's the same system, but if all he did was, okay, I'm going to speak and here it is, and he didn't do those memory championships to continue getting PR, he would not have the sales that he has.
Right. Yeah, it's all about being in front of people, definitely.
Consistently.
Which is sounds exhausting.
Oh, it is. It is. But, you know, that's a choice you make, and that's where it helps if you have some foundational income through a traditional mean to start with, so you have your expenses covered in your personal responsibilities. And then when you commit to, okay, I'm going to take this passion, I've always wanted to do this, you connect with a person you can trust. Because it's scary for people to trust.
Isn't it wild? Yeah. Definitely. Because people are little idea thieves, too. That's the other thing. Well, I was going to ask you about that in a minute. But
yeah. Confidentiality agreements are really important. You know, with Courtney, I was saying earlier, she's now looking at, okay, which salon am I going to start working at as I slowly become a celebrity hair designer? Because that's the thing, she's going to become a celebrity hair designer. That will take time. We have a system set up. We're going through the process. And she has this wonderful interaction with the new owner of a salon that's going to open up, and she sends me the email, and they don't have a website yet. Okay, let me look up the name, the Copyright Trademark Office. I posted that, you know, on Facebook, and I didn't post the details, but the thing is, her name's taken by someone else who has been using the name since 1997.
Pick a new one.
And, yeah, and, you know, it's like, thank goodness, you know, Courtney emailed me what she did, how she did, including the name, where I did a lookup, and then I sent the information back to Courtney. Now, it's going to be a little awkward for Courtney to say, hey, my mentor and consultant wanted me to pass this on to you, because I know that business owner is probably going to freak, so I'll probably see if I can have a conversation with her to help her through this. But that's one of those basic things.
Well, trademarking is critical. In fact, our trademarking for Best Ever You just went through 2 days ago.
Mm-hmm.
Finally. Yeah, because it's such a – there's just three common words so often used that the trademark – I mean, it literally we just got approval like 2 days ago. But trademarking can we go there for a minute, how important trademarking
is? Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
definitely.
And, you know, I hired a law firm to do our trademarking. I just said, you know, I don't want to deal with this. You do the search and you do everything. But when you have a business name, do you think it's important to trademark it?
I do. If it means that much to you, yeah. If you're going to make this, again, it goes back to what is your level of commitment and responsibility to that business. How long is that level of commitment? You know, how deep is that level of responsibility? Is it going to go on for the next 5 years, 10 years? I mean, whatever it is, even 1 year, you do want to protect your name because you want to be sure you're not accidentally using somebody else's.
Yeah.
Because I tell you, there are businesses I've worked with when they run into this, and I have to help. My role is to rebrand them and do damage control. And they've invested so much money in marketing, website, peripherals, brand recognition in their community on a name they didn't know when they started off. And I wasn't there. They didn't know. They should have checked if the name was even available. And it's heartbreaking for them to go through that. It's so they're so exhausted.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think I love those two words, commitment and responsibility, because you know, you really do have to put a lot of time and heart into time, energy, heart and soul, and gosh, blood, sweat, tears, I don't know what other words, into a business.
You do. Now, you know, the thing, too, that I think it's important for us to address is why is it some people have challenges when it comes to commitment and responsibility? And that can be overcommitment as well as undercommitment.
Oh, I like that a lot. That's definitely overcommitment and undercommitment. Yep, that's talk about those a little bit. Overcommitment,
well,
seems too much.
either of those pendulums are indicators that they're working from an area of fear and rejection, of failure, overachieving expectations that are not realistic and not even sometimes in their best interest.
Can we go there for 1 second? Because we've talked a lot about this as a family. When I started Best Ever You, and it's the only example I know, so I'm going to talk about it a little bit.
Sure.
Because it draws upon some of the points you've made here that are awesome. You know how you initially said, you know, your support network around you. When I first started Best Ever You, I it just started as a little tiny website, and then I kind of saw the potential and did a little business plan and did a little of this and that. And as it grew and so forth, my husband and I really had a very long discussion about all of the what ifs. Because when you're out in the public with a company like this, even like your company, my company, when you're out as a brand of a company, the name of the company is associated with you or whatever, your whole family gets dragged out with you. It's very interesting how you almost have to think about if that's what everybody wants.
You're exactly right, because when you are out, your name is out there, and especially the closer to your community where people know you, and they go to your kids. Oh, your mom is the...
Yes.
Right. And then, you know, it's like the kids are to be raised, being equipped on how to handle questions that, you know, immature women might even ask them, even if they're only 10 years old. It's amazing how sometimes people will go to our kids and they will ask them a question they are really out of line in asking, crossing a child's boundary who would not even know the answer at that age. But somehow the child needs to be equipped with an answer such as, you know what, great question, you should talk to my mom.
That's what we do with our kids, if anybody ever asks anything. Because once we, in particular, once we interview somebody famous, and so forth, you know, like really famous, like if we have somebody on the cover of the magazine or something like that.
Yeah.
People, they will go to the kids and work through the kids. Very, very interesting. So we've had some discussions around that, and I know I'm being a little bit focused in that, you know, we both own sort of media companies in a way. You know, they're both a little bit like that where you're out there. But
well, we're using,
you know,
we're using our companies as examples because it can apply to anything. It
to
could
anything.
Be a bakery, could be a floral shop, it could be a salon. What happens is the more popular and the more brand recognition a company attracts and builds and gets pushed out there, the kids do become targets. And if we're naive, they're unintentional. If we're smart, we're aware, and we set up practices for their protection so they know how to respond. I mean, I've been asked, why don't you have your life story book out yet to read? And I go, that was a choice to wait until my kids were young adults. Because if I would have shared the, you know, going into hiding from an ex who was you know.
Oh, yeah, you can't put that out there with little people. You know, with little kids. Yeah, no. It might just shift the whole game in a way, in a direction you don't want to. So kudos to you for thinking about that for sure.
I didn't want them to have questions at an age that they could not answer those questions. Yeah. Over the last year, they're okay now with me putting that book together and them participating in it. And, of course, there is a distinction as far as what details to put in and not to put in. But even in its lighter form, I didn't want them to have people, okay, you're Angelina's kids. Yeah, I read the book. It's really incredible.
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever. Yeah. And what do you think about this? At this age now,
they're too little
okay with answering it. Yeah.
Yeah, now they are. But yeah. Yeah,
yeah, so protecting our children is important.
I think it's, and our husbands and so forth, too, because they really it's just interesting as it becomes more and more popular. And my husband said, well, what is it that you want? What's your ultimate goal? What is it? Do you want to be like Oprah? Do you want to be like, you know, what do you want to do with this? And I found myself sort of scratching my head, not having a really good answer for that. What do you think about, and not me, but what do you think about potential and the goals? Do you always have to have an end goal?
I think part of it is the journey. I don't believe, just like in the business plan, it to be in ink, it needs to be in pencil, it needs to be fluid, because life happens between our plans.
Yeah, well, that was kind of my response, too. I'm like, how do you expect me to, you know, answer that question? Because, you know, I might meet, you know, Joe Smith one day, and he might say, hey, go, let's put you on TV. I couldn't plan for that in a million years.
Well, actually, you could. You just go by the airtime, Elizabeth. It's simple, dear. Nowadays, we don't have to wait for someone. We can just buy the airtime.
Buy the airtime.
Hey, it's only, you know what? I bet in your area, it's maybe $500 a week. That's it for a half-hour show.
It's not it's not bad at all to do shows and stuff like that, but it but you know what I'm trying to say. It's just that there are things that you couldn't possibly plan for exactly. Although some people seem to be a little bit more calculated.
I am more calculated in my world because I like numbers. And I like knowing that when certain numbers are met, those achievements open doors to other things that might not have happened. And so for me, I'm a bit more calculated. When Daniel and I were talking last week about, okay, we're here in Oregon for a season. I go back and forth to Texas. We're going to do this ride. You know, we'll be on the road for 4 months. 110 days. He calculated out 2.5 million pedals, you know, rotations on a bicycle.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'll do the sag wagon, I'll ride, and then I'll fly in and out as well to take care of my other responsibilities. And I'll be filming and interviewing along the way. I said, okay, when this is done, come fall, we have all the footage, I have to edit for the film and all that stuff. I'm already looking at a resort retreat type of environment that I want us to own. And I'm looking at the traditional, you know, have the traditional spa rejuvenation center that continues to be growing as far as an industry as we live longer. And baby boomers and those that are, I'm not a baby boomer, I come after that, but still I'm aging. And so I know there are people with a disposable income that are going to continue to want to improve themselves. And so your traditional low risk has a history of working rejuvenation kind of a center. So that's one thing. And then alongside that, have our brain wellness center, which has to do with transformational thinking, which has to do with brain chemistry testing, which has to do with the rebuilding of people's brains and behaviors and attitudes, because we are, you know, we really have an interest in that. And it's amazing, just in the last 3 years, the discoveries that have been made where you can film the brain and you're going, oh, in 90 days, if I do these things, my brain will actually physically look different.
I should connect you with my husband's cousin, who is, I don't know his exact title, but he helps run Nash General Hospital in North Carolina, and he's the chief neurology officer or whatever. I don't know what
Cool.
his title is exactly.
Yeah.
But he helped, when my dad had his stroke, he helped save his life. His name is Dr. Rick Garino. And really, really great guy, but he would be probably very interested in something brain brain-centered.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well,
so
you know,
those are two of your big goals. Sorry.
Yes, because I look at, I mean, now with the understanding, oh, my God, I wish I had this years ago, parenting, you know, having parenting programs where mm-hmm. New parents-to-be, parents of kids, of all ages, but for them to go, okay, the chemistry in my child's brain before puberty is not there for them to make adult-like decisions. So I need to not treat them like little grown-ups because they don't have the software in their brain to be able to do those things.
Right.
So when our expectations are adjusted to what a truer reality is, because we have more information to even know and understand what that reality is, we make life on our children so much easier and on ourselves.
Oh, yeah. I was just reading that I think it's the frontal lobe of a child isn't even developed yet until, like, especially in boys, until they're much, much older.
25.
Yeah, it was wild, and it makes a lot of sense of why I'm saying to my son, you're not getting behind the wheel of a car, not a chance, you're not mature enough. And he looks at me like, but I'm almost 16, and I'm like, it's going to be like 17, sorry.
Well, here's the thing
that is
really positive about if your husband, not you, it's like, mom, move out of the picture.
Dad can't come from over.
Because what will happen is that in women and in girls and moms and daughters, when moms and daughters often have their periods at the same time hormonally, they become insane.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
I grew up in a household of 10 or 11 kids, 8 of them girls.
Mm-hmm. So the same thing happens in guys, though, on a hormonal level. And they didn't know that eons ago. They know that now. They know that if the guys get around each other on a consistent basis, they're feeding some things on such a cellular level to each other. They're relating on such a cellular level to each other. They need that. And what's beautiful is that your family is together. They have a dad. Your sons have a dad. It's hard for single moms who don't have dads for their sons. Their sons actually are shortchanged in that process.
Right.
And you know, and thankfully our blended family has become healthier over the last few years. But we went through some challenges were now when Daniel and I look at, okay, this is what it really meant. This is what was really going on a physiological level. Crap. I wish I would have had this knowledge back then that I have now from a preventative standpoint.
Right.
So that,
well, that I think that's a really neat goal to want to own something like that. And I can see you doing that. And I could see you helping a lot of people. It's interesting to me when something is your passion, how you can really give back and help other people. Do you think that's what it's all about?
I do. I really do. I want to touch on one thing that I think people forget sometimes, mm-hmm. and they shortchange themselves accidentally, is that when you pick a business, if you're wanting to do it more for fun and you're not interested as much in making money, you will run that business one way. If you're interested in having the business that you choose to run and expand and grow and commit your time and responsibility to, if you're interested in that becoming a financial leg in your life that you can retire, your kids' education is taken care of, you're looking at your grandchildren, you're looking at those things ahead,
mm-hmm.
your business plans or your process on achieving those goals are black and white, totally different as night and day.
Do you think you can set out to have the business, to have the goal, you know, the time and the responsibility and all that, but have it fail?
Can you have it fail, you're asking?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, because if you're not keeping up with the trends in the marketplace, if you're not refining your product, if you're not getting input, if you're not doing certain things that are required to have the best product, also charge. That's another thing. People do not charge what their product is worth out of fear of not getting paid anything at all. So then they charge too little, therefore in the marketplace, viewed as not being worth a lot. And Daniel was asked the other day, it was kind of funny, he was at the Verizon store and the Bionic is not out yet, phone, it's going to come out later this summer, and so he's around two other guys and they're pressing him on, so how much do you charge per hour for coaching or whatever? He's smart, he knows he needs to delegate that to me, and I wasn't there at the moment, so he avoided answering that question, but he said, I'm not going to answer that question. These gentlemen would buy into paying $20,000 an hour for his coaching.
Yeah.
However, if he would have said, like a therapist or a psychologist, I charge $150 an hour, they would not have been interested. So I think part of the awareness that people need to have in business is the industry I'm in, the clients I want to reach, they are used to paying X amount of dollars. And
yeah.
if you charge too little, you're going to get the little paying clients. If you charge what the market has been charging, the higher disposable income clients,
mm-hmm.
they are going to see the value. And they actually have no problem paying. Now, people who have money will probably have the cheapest phone because people with money are very thrifty.
Yeah.
They spend it on what matters. They spend it on what matters. So they may not have the newest gizmo or gadget because that's not really what matters to them. But if there is something else that matters, whether it's, you know, they love to race because they like speed, they'll spend $3 million on a car, but they'll have a $20 cell phone.
Yeah, that's welcome to our world. we never have the latest gadgets. People always look at us like, what are you doing? And we're just like, well, why spend money on that? I always, I'm funny like that. I don't know why. But anyway, whatever. But
it's relative to how your business is going to succeed.
Yeah.
You know, again, if I go back to Courtney with her hair designing, she's used to working in salons that charge below what her future clientele will be paying because of the caliber of the clientele and Courtney's talent and her expertise and how she challenges and grows herself. The more we work on ourselves to be stronger in the marketplace than what we have to offer, from our knowledge to our services, the higher value we have in the marketplace. Therefore, we can charge more for that.
Right. Do you, the one question I had about owning a business is, it's very interesting to me how one point I've struggled with for sure is because we refuse to get an investor at this point. And and that's a personal choice. I'm trying to do best every year without an investor. And there's reasons for that. But what hurdle I can't seem to get over though is hiring salespeople. I can't seem to attract the quality of salespeople I need without paying them a salary on top of commission. Do you think I'm...
No, it comes...
Go ahead.
Okay. I can understand and relate to what you're saying. It's a good salesperson is happy to be on commission.
That's what I always thought, too. And I, it's very interesting. I'm like, well, you know, I always thought that a good salesperson would be happy to have a really high commission. And I don't know what I'm not. It's interesting. I don't know what I'm not doing right. But I have had a lot of trouble attracting employees to come work for Best Ever You.
Part of it.
Do you think that's a common thing with startups because it's bumpy?
No, I think what's common is the expectation. It's the understanding and the expectation of the question, what really makes a good and a successful salesperson? Now, a good and successful salesperson, in my experience, in the beginning, it's okay if they have part base and part commission because we understand they're going into something new. There is a probational period where they have to learn more about the product. They need to get familiar with the response that they're going to get back. It's like that training time. And so base with a commission is reasonable. Some people are fine with 100% commission, and that's because they probably have a savings. So they're not desperate or really, really tight. But a healthy start is, okay, here's your base. And then, you know, your commission, whatever that structure is. People who are passionate about your cause aren't necessarily your best salespeople.
Salespeople
are about money and numbers. So
I think that's good for everybody to take away. Sorry.
Yeah.
And I'm interrupting you because we only have 2 minutes left. And I didn't mean to interrupt you. Sorry about that. Yeah, isn't that wild? We've been on the phone forever. I just looked, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, we only have 2 minutes left. And so I sort of wanted to wrap up a little bit, but I think that's really good information for anybody. I brought it up under Best Ever You, but I know so many companies need salespeople right now, and I'm hearing the same thing. You know, Elizabeth, have you found anybody? No, Doug, I haven't. Have you? No.
There are a ton of salespeople out there looking for jobs. And so the person who is going to be rewarded the most financially is going to be the one who has no problem starting out with a base and a commission and will do the numbers because it's about numbers. And secondary, if they're passionate about the company and all the goals and all that wonderful stuff, that's all emotional, fluffy stuff to salespeople, then great. It's a secondary win. But salespeople, it's about numbers. It's about how many pebbles they can put in their pocket at the end of the day. It's not about their passion initially, about the company.
Yeah. Well, let's go back and end on commitment and responsibility. I think those are two fantastic takeaways from this phone call. You've just provided a wealth of information for people starting up companies or being CEOs already. Or I do want to direct people to a website or two that you would like to direct them to. Go for it.
I would say right now go to momtrepreneurs.com. We've got our cycling route, the 5,000 miles from the tip of Washington State down to South Padre up to where you are, Elizabeth, in September. And so I'll be filming women, and if there are women out there that have guys, they need to get on a bicycle for some grown-up male transformation, whether it's a day or a week. They can pedal with Daniel. The men are pedaling at different points, so they don't have to do the whole thing. Daniel's the whole thing. Guys can jump in at any point. So,
I think we'll probably do something in the magazine on you. and that whole effort. But for now, we've got to go. And I want to thank you so much for being with us again this week, and we'll see you next Tuesday at the same time. And we'll go back to your Believe and Achieve. So thank you so much, Angelina, and I hope you have a great day.
You too. Okay.
All right. Bye-bye.